Hello and welcome to Opus on Siouxland Public Media. I'm your host, Gretchen Gondek. And a dear and valued friend is going to be our guest today on Opus, Marcia Poole from the Betty Strong Encounter Center. Hello, Marcia. And of course, formerly the Sioux City Journal.
Oh, right. For about 95 years. That was, yes. But you know, that was such a great to have that experience for a long time, actually for about 20 years. But, you know, we were on the ground learning everything, every part of the community and from, you know, the night police to checking in admissions for the hospitals, the school board, the campaigns, the political scene. Boy, Sioux City, you really get a wonderful broad experience as a young reporter and as a not so young reporter. But I had a great time, learned so much.
And you have been such a historian in the sense you've written, authored a number of books and have really preserved for us much of the history of Sioux City. And in fact, that's why you're here today, because I don't know if our listeners realize this, Marcia, but January 31st, 40 years ago, KWIT went on the air. I can't believe
40 years
have gone by.
Yes, yes. And, you know, I think of Dr. Kaiser. I think of the early board people. I think of Betty Main and the people who really pushed for it. And there was opposition. There was some opposition to it for a number of reasons. And, you know, you think of the struggle, just Western Iowa Tech and the board and the funding and all of the red tape that goes to getting approval. At that time, of course, Western Iowa, we didn't have anything. We didn't have public radio here. Oh, yes, we could listen to the public radio from bordering states, but that had none of our local news. That had none of our humanities. It didn't serve the interests of our community. And yet there were public radio stations in eastern Iowa that our tax, you know, state tax money was supporting. And of course, around the country, our federal taxes were supporting. So here, there were a number of people and agencies that felt that we were underserved or unserved, and we should have a public radio station. So, thank you. Hats off to the Western Iowa Tech Community College Board, and I had the opportunity to interview Dr. Kaiser, who started here in 1969, was the founder, correct? Yes.
That is correct. Marcia, tell us about the paper that you wrote about KWIT for your graduate course, and you called it Breaking Ground in Western Iowa, 1975 to 1978.
I did this for a mass communication class at graduate school, and I went as what they call a non-traditional person, simply because at that point it was, there's so much to, I have some experience, there's so much to talk about. And I was very interested in this one class of KWIT. We came to Sioux City in 1978, in the summer of 1978, and so it was on the air. But I was very interested in all the news media coverage that this had, shall I say, evoked, the opposition to it, the struggle to get funding for KWIT that many people now, you think, well, this is more than 40 years ago, because it really started, you know, in 75, 76, when Western Iowa Tech was encouraged to go forward with a plan to have a public radio station. But, you know, we forget history, and, you know, people say, well, who was that? How did this happen? And, you know, all of the work that went into it and the reason for it. And I think that has a lot to do with why we have community colleges and some very interesting perspective from Dr. Kaiser at that time that I really enjoyed talking to him. And one of the things he told me was that it was under the code of Iowa, community colleges were formed not only to train students, but also to perform community services which would upgrade the quality of life for the constituents they serve. And I think they believe that the public radio station fulfills this criteria. It would bring education. It would bring, you know, bilingual services. It would bring agricultural reporting, the humanities, you know, music that wasn't available elsewhere. But I think there also there might have been people who think, well, it's, you know, a vocational, technical, whatever we called it at the time. And this wasn't part of their mission. And as he felt very strongly, and the other board members, it was part of their and serving the public interest.
And you know, what's interesting to me is that the radio station is at a 2-year technical school. It's not at Briarcliff University or Morningside College, which are, you know, more in the liberal arts.
Yes. And don't you just suppose that there was just my conjecture that's how some people felt. Although the public was really behind this, and reading editorials, particularly in the Sioux City Journal, very supportive of this. Business leaders in Sioux City, very supportive of it. The Tax Research Council, however, opposed it. They said they didn't necessarily oppose public radio, but they opposed some of the funding, some of the sources of funding, in that if there was money coming from the tax levy, and they didn't feel that was proper. There was money left over from construction of the college, and that was to be used. But oh my gosh, you talk about trying to get the funding and the grants. And then there were, you should just have a repeater. This should just be a repeater. Well, then when you looked at at how much that would cost, plus it would take away the eligibility for funding, because it wasn't a station, it was practically a wash. It was practically a wash. So the other thing about KWIT that I think the visionaries had in mind was it would be a place for training for Western Iowa Tech students, for Briarcliff students, Morningside, for an agreement that they would have. And I must say, I took courses at Briarcliff. Where did I take my radio broadcasting? Here at KWIT, I had a blast. I just loved it. Of course, that was in the, you know, that w- it was, you know, radio. And look at, here we are today, where radio is just as, maybe even more relevant, and certainly to bring us our local news and the arts. And in the end, Western Iowa Tech, the board, Dr. Kaiser, they prevailed. And as you say, it opened, although I think we should point out that it opened in a trailer right behind the building, because the building wasn't quite done, or the studios weren't quite done.
I've heard stories about that when it would rain or hail. It was not the best place to be. But looking back into the 60s, do you want to talk about the Communications Act and the establishment of actually five public radio stations in Iowa?
In Iowa, yes. But they were, now that was the Public Broadcasting Act of 1967, and that created the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And the corporation for the mandate was that the Corporation for Public Broadcasting would encourage development of non-commercial radio. And so then the Corporation for Public created these expansion grants to help the underserved or unserved areas to build and operate stations. Well, you know, as I said, we had nothing over here. And Eastern Iowa did have, they had, I don't know, were there at that time three in the mid-70s? and we had nothing. So in the summer of 1975, this is when Western Iowa Tech, the board, they determined that they were, you know, that there was a need for public radio. And frankly, it from my research, Western Iowa Tech was the only institution that was really willing to go forward with this. It was a huge amount of work, and to, you know, for the funding. And then, of course, the beginning, as always, construction estimates. You know, after what, 2 years, you know, everything had gone up. And but what I was always struck by, Gretchen, with the with what is that it did. It seemed to have so much public support. The tax levy was first approved by Area 3 voters in 67. This is for Western Iowa Tech, again in 1972. And now they were being asked with the public radio station to vote on it again September 10th, 1976. And that levy would add 20¼ cents per $1,000 of assessed property valuation to their tax bills. And despite the opposition, the levy passed. And it would be, it was $300,000 that Western Iowa Tech used. It was the leftover. And I just want to make that clear. Nothing else was ever used from that. I also want to point out that, yes, the startup money from the different grants, different, governmental bodies, and also that leftover money from the Sioux City property taxes. Then we have a wonderful thing known as Friends of FM 90. And Betty Main was president of that. Boy, they started raising funds right away, and so any shortfall, they bridged that gap, and so you see, there was just a tremendous amount of local support for KWIT FM 90. Am I saying that right? That's right. And the operating funds. The operating funds for this public radio station were approved by the Iowa House and Senate on May 21st, 1977. And then the meeting to open the bids to building the station, and which houses studios, or the construction of the building, that was on June 6th, 1977. And the estimated cost, $540,000. And that $300,000 came from the leftover tax levy. So that was contracts were awarded, and at the same time the board voted to raise tuition by 10%. However, Western Iowa Tech had the lowest tuition in the state. So this was the ground was broken July 1st, 1977, right here, right where we sit. So and less than 2 weeks later, Governor Robert Ray signed, an appropriation bill which included $120,000 for KWIT's first year of operation. He hadn't always been in favor of it. And this is what I find so fascinating, is the fortitude of the Western Iowa Tech Board and Dr. Kaiser in keeping at it. And I think that's the... You know, you honor their memory and honor their legacy here at KWIT and for Sioux City and the whole listening area.
There was some opposition to the station.
Yes, and it was mainly, as I say, the tax research conference. And it hung on that factor that property taxes should not be used for this, and that was strictly for technical aspects of the community college, there was also Dr. Kaiser had some thoughts about that also, but maybe some didn't feel that the community college was the place to have public radio. So he thought that there was, some little, I don't know. I don't want to say prejudice, but the tax research conference, that's where what they had pushed back about was using that. And it was there were meetings, there were a lot of editorials in the journal promoting it. And there was a meeting at Denison, Iowa, as a public meeting on July 30th, 1975, and to get input for that. And and Western Iowa Tech was the institution that showed up and, you know, really was interested in this. But think of it, they have electronics department, electronics program, and it was pretty logical, you know. It's thinking about their mission about enriching. Look at what Western Iowa Tech does now. I, as a, shall we say, a more mature listener, the lifelong learning and all of the things that, and it's always been that way. I can remember way back, you know, in the 70s, you know, the all the cooking classes and all the different, we had a lot of fun here. And I remember doing a lot of stories here with the, I guess at that time it was called like adult education or you know, something. We had different terminology for it. But there was never any sense that there was some line that because it was a community college that it couldn't go beyond that. So and thank goodness for the board and Dr. Kaiser.
Absolutely. A man of great vision. And I think about how fortunate I am because I served under all three presidents.
Oh, my gosh.
Dr. Kaiser, Dr. Dunker,
yes.
And now Dr. Merle.
Oh, yes, yes.
And you're right. I mean, the evolution of the college, it's become a much more sophisticated place. And, you know, I think about our culinary program here, which is, have you seen their kitchen? I should take you.
Yeah, just, I've got it.
You'll
want
to move in. It's just
yes.
Absolutely fantastic. And band instrument repair and electronics and just, I mean, the college continues to move forward, as does the radio station. I think about first working here and we had those giant tapes.
Oh, yes, yes.
Reel-to-reel tapes, and there's invariably something would, you know, go wrong. And then I remember some of the people who are no longer with us, like Betty Main and
yes.
Bill Dybel, and, of course, our dear beloved Margaret Ann Everest.
Oh, my gosh.
Who did so much
yes.
for the station.
Yes, yeah. All the friends. And, you know, this is, of course, just my thinking, having moved here in 1978, but I don't know. I think there was a strong feeling here that, you know, don't be turning up your nose at Western Iowa, that we, you know, not just deserve our public radio station, that we have so much to, you know, to tell. I there was somebody, and I'm trying to, I can't put my finger on it, with this having a repeater or something. So, and the person said, well, why do we want weather from Ames? You know, why do we just want, it's as if we're not, we don't have enough news. And oh my gosh, do we have news in this town? And, you know, of course, all the cultural all the cultural offerings. And so this is what I think fulfilling that you know, that vision of the initial, you know, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and of course the Dr. Kaiser and all of the presidents since then, and you know, all the friends, and they took such joy in it. Betty Main just. Didn't she just revel in it?
Yes, she did.
Just reveled in it and told them, no, this is very much an educational resource. This isn't frivolous. This is not just a, you know, oh, something that's somebody, it's a luxury we can't afford. No, this is a necessity, and this is a basic for education. I think of the bilingual, the languages that are offered and programming. Think of Iris.
South of the border and
yes,
Iris.
Yes, south of the border and Iris. For goodness sakes, you have, underserved people. And, if there's anything maybe we don't do enough of is telling our own story and how many people are served by this. And, Gretchen, too, I think there's a sense that you build confidence in yourself and you have pride in your community and you want to tell your stories because we have stories to tell. And that's why public radio is here, to keep people informed. To it's like I listen to Eddie Dunn and he always, opens the world of music to me of the Eddie Dunn and all the different, composers and artists that maybe I haven't heard before. So Betty Main was right. It is educational in the best sense of the word. I don't have to take a test, too. I always like that when I listen to Kay, when I don't have to take a test. And just all the, the great local programming. And, it's our local non-commercial radio station. So it's, you remember those people who work so hard. Oh, couldn't you just see? It must have been so just uphill trying to, to get the funding together and then having the construction costs go up. And, and then all of the red tape, with the FCC that you go through. So this was a labor of love, I would say, a labor of love. And
truly.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so it's just, and you asked me at the beginning why I wanted to do this paper, because I think I felt I've listened to KWIT, a friend of KWIT, and been out here taking classes out here, so it was very personal for me. And just like when I did my thesis on the 232 as a reporter, it was personal. And even though they train you as a reporter, you're not supposed to, you're supposed to be objective, whatever that means. But I think being part of this experience and seeing how much it means to people, you really want to dig in and get to those stories and put it on the record so that people always remember the visionaries, the people who work so hard, who took all the guff for why do you want to do that, and facing the public, and then remember people like my mentor at the Journal, Cal Olson, who wrote a number of editorials strongly, strongly backing KWIT, and that everything was in good shape and we should go for it. And then all the letters to the editor. There was a lady from Lamar's that I always remember, and she wrote a letter to the about how necessary this was. Not just, oh, gee, this would be nice, but it was necessary, and that, how much she loved public radio. So it was, the other thing is that just the argument that Sioux City taxpayers and, property owners, why should they be paying for something that's used by others? Well, we're a community. We're a greater community. People back when the stockyards, all the people from the area, they would bring the ranchers and they bring their livestock to market. They would shop here. They would come here. They would eat here. Entertainment. They'd go to all. So it's always been a center for people way beyond, our city border.
I really believe that public radio has strengthened the communities we serve.
Oh, yes.
And, a voice for the arts, the symphony and our beautiful art center and museum and all of the cultural organizations that we serve here in Sioux City. It's quite an extraordinary thing. And there's something so magical about local public radio when you're, some of my best listening experiences are in the car, those driveway moments, but, catching an interview and it's so compelling, you don't want to get out of the car.
Oh, yeah.
And I think Mark Munger has done a wonderful job in taking the station to that next level and really utilizing technology, which in this field is changing every day.
Yes, yes. And just, yeah, I think it's remarkable, too, how, I don't know if it's that with the explosion of technology, you know, maybe some people, oh, well, I don't know if, you know, radio is, it's just as relevant as ever. It's just as, and personally, it is a much more personal experience in the car, and, you know, it's nice, too, that you can get it on your app. Yeah, your app.
Who thought that you could carry your radio station on your smartphone? But, and then you can listen to KWIT on one, not channel, but one band. And the next band is 24/7 classical. And then on the third one is BBC radio. So, I mean, you have all kinds of options and choices. But what makes KWIT really special is we are remaining a local public radio station.
Absolutely.
And you know, that the landscape of public radio in Iowa now is very different than it was in the 60s and 70s. You have Iowa Public Radio, and I think you still have a station in Council Bluffs, but also in, I think, Cedar Rapids. It's a jazz station run by Dennis Green. Great, great jazz station. But, you know, it's so important to serve the local audience.
Oh, yes.
And you can't really do that with a statewide network.
Yeah.
So we are very proud of the fact that we stand alone up here in Northwest Iowa serving our constituency.
Yes. I agree with Betty Main. It's not a luxury. It's something that gives us great identity, a sense of, you know, who we are. And boy, that's so important for the stability, I think, of a community. And I go back to my old mentor, Cal Olson at the Journal, who was editor of the Journal. And I remember he said to me in many occasions, he says, Poole, all we got to sell is local. Local, and it's so true. It's so true, you know, because that's the... that's what, and also that sense of community too. So when you have, and yes, we can be connected on social media and that, but having these institutions that are there and have been, well, look at 40 years, Gretchen, 40 years, KWIT has been, and it's here. It's, you know, I think of all the things that are gone. I was just talking about bishops. Now nobody else will know. Maybe some of the listeners are, but you know, things come and go and come and go. And I think that stability is so, it's so reassuring to us. And it just seems that we need that as much or maybe more than ever. I tip my hat to the administrators and the boards of Western Iowa Tech that have started and have sustained KWIT, all the taxpayers, and you know, all of you got on air guys.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of a you know, I always thought how fun to be behind the microphone, but then it's a lot of work.
It is.
Yes.
Well, Marsha, I've got a question for you. Do
sure.
you know what the very first piece of music that was played on KWIT? Because we're going to hear it now.
Okay.
Any guesses?
I'm just thinking, okay, classical.
Mm-hmm. Beethoven.
Oh, Beethoven. Not the fifth?
The Consecration of the House Overture. Could there be anything more apropos?
Beautiful. That's perfect.
So let's take a little break and listen now to Beethoven's Overture to the Consecration of the House.
Thank you.
the music of Beethoven, the consecration of the House Overture, Herbert von Karajan leading the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra. The consecration of the House Overture represents the very first piece of classical music heard on public radio station KWIT on January 31st, 1978. And continuing in a celebratory mood, we're going to hear next a work of George Frideric Handel, Music for the Royal Fireworks, performed by the English Chamber Orchestra. Johannes Sommery is the conductor.
Thank you.
closing out our Opus program today with music for the Royal Fireworks of George Frideric Handel, performed by the English Chamber Orchestra, led by Johannes Sommery. Our thanks to Marcia Poole for her insights and research shared today, marking Siouxland Public Media, KWIT, KOJI's 40th anniversary on the air. I'm Gretchen Gondek, thanking you very much for joining us today, and may your day be filled with the joy of music. This is Siouxland Public Media, KWIT Sioux City 90.3 and KOJI Okoboji 90.7, broadcasting from the campus of Western Iowa Tech Community College.